Good morning. These opening words were written by Gretchen Haley, who serves one of our congregations in Colorado. And she has written several pieces of liturgy for this moment in our national life. So I offer you these words of Gretchen Haley. There is nothing you need to bring with you to be welcome here. No right beliefs or proof of citizenship. No eternal optimism or clarity of conviction. No boundless courage or endless expertise. You do not need to know what brought you here or how you will solve that problem that you are turning over and over and over in your mind. Your bills do not need to be paid, and your checkbook can be a mess. Your children can have been up half the night, and your hearing aids may not be working. Your knees may be creaking. You do not have to be already perfect, or even halfway, to belong to this circle, where grace meets us where we are, but does not leave us where it found us, where love resides in each of us, yet is somehow more than all, where life pulses and rages and heals and transforms, creating us and this day anew once again. Come, let us worship. I would like to invite Sylvia Foster and Mary Doan and Renee Hitzroth. Are you here? She's not here yet. There you are. I would like to invite you to come and light our chalice this morning because these are three of the people who created some of the art that is surrounding us this morning. We don't have any other artists here. People who created this particular art. You're all artists. And we're going to hear a little bit more about this art in just a few minutes. But for now, would you come forward and light our chalice while the rest of us speak the words of our covenant, which are printed in the order of service? Love is the doctrine of this church. The quest for truth is its sacrament, and service is its prayer.
To dwell together in peace, to see knowledge and freedom, to serve humanity in fellowship, to respect the nurturing power within all of us. Thus do we covenant.
I invite you to join in singing our opening hymn, and this morning, the last shall be first, at least in terms of hymns, and so we will sing hymn 170, We Are a Gentle, Angry People, hymn 170. Before we let our children go, I wanted all of us to hear just a little bit about this art that is hanging here on our walls, and you'll see an even larger piece in the community room when you go out either for your classes or for social time. There's that big piece is right down low, and so if you are a small person who's going to be face-to-face with the art, which is great, just don't put your hands on it. It's one of those things that to look at, but not to touch. And for the rest of us, it's balanced a little bit. It's not precarious, but we need to be mindful not to bump into the beautiful art that's right down where we can get a good look at it. So all of that, Sylvia Foster is going to talk to us just a little bit about how this art came into being.
Good morning. Yesterday, we had a walk for racial unity in Exeter. Townspeople hosted tours of significant places and faces from the past. Barbara Rimkunis, our curator at the Historical Society, had given our planning committee much material. She reviewed stories of Exeter families who had held enslaved people in their homes. She told us of Native Americans who could no longer fish for their sustenance because white men had used up the river with milling lumber, and the fish could not survive that kind of mistreatment. These stories and more tell our past, but we don't often pay attention. Members of this church were listening yesterday to our past. It was good to see so many of us at Town Hall in community. The destination for the walk was a room full of images of a future we want to see. A gallery of drawings here today in our sanctuary. One of the drawings is of Ruby Bridges. Our planning group was encouraged to tell stories about people who were in our past, and we were especially encouraged that a child at the walk knew the story of Ruby. Ruby, who was a smart and aspiring child who happened to be the first black youth to be integrated into an all-white school in the South. I was so glad that that 9-year-old had heard about Ruby from his teachers. I had not heard about her from mine. I was given instead images of Martin Luther King that made him a sort of a fairy tale figure. So when artists Renee Allen, Reverend Mary Doan, and I were discussing what to make of all of this, they both said they'd heard of King and Rosa Parks only. But they hadn't heard that Rosa Parks, as she told her biographer, had many Native American ancestors, along with her African American people, in her heritage. Which just reminds us of how intertwining all of our backgrounds really are. I'd learned about Ruby Bridges in my late teens because the artist Norman Rockwell had painted her image. It became a symbol to people of the 60s, a problem that we all needed to work on for solutions. Because when Ruby got to school on her first day, there were no other children in the classroom. Barbara Henry, a white Boston native, was the only teacher willing to teach Ruby. All year, she was in a class of one. Ruby ate lunch alone. Sometimes she played with her teacher at recess. She never missed a day of school. She graduated from an all-black high school. Yesterday at the Racial Unity Program, our Jim Weber had his button-making machine in full tilt. He offered one button that was an image of a wide array of Crayola crayons with the labels flesh. Those crayons were every color from light peach to beautiful dark brown to black. Does anyone want to guess what year Crayola sort of woke up to that idea of peach-colored crayons being labeled flesh and changed it? They changed it to peach in 1962. Ooh, it was not accurate, that flesh, and it was bone-deep bias. I love the picture among those here that was drawn by an Exeter resident whose country of origin is Morocco. The images of faces she drew are three different shades of peach and browns. That is her heritage. Three lovely bands of DNA combined. I bet a lot of us come from such swirls of skin color. Richard Haynes, our teacher in that class, who helped us produce the paintings, asked us to imagine what racial unity would look like. What would we have to gain by it as individuals or as a town? And we drew our answers. We talked and laughed and cried together for 8 weeks. We asked ourselves, what about the colors of crayons or Band-Aids or aspirations, and broken dreams. The questions belong to all of us. Every day, we can pay attention and act to keep dreams alive for all of us, and not just a select few. We have the power to stop the habits of offering less education and health care and nourishing food and safe housing to whole groups of people. The artists invite you to consider ways we may interrupt bias and walk on the side of love.
These beautiful creations of art will be here. Well, I know they'll be here today, and I think that they are going to go on tour in Exeter, and then I think they'll come back here at some point. So if you don't get a chance to really look at them and talk about them as a family today, you will have another chance. And with that, we will sing our young people and their leaders out to Young Church. This brief reading is said to be from the Talmud, and I suspect that it is a combination of two texts. Do not be daunted by the enormity of the world's grief. Do justly now, love mercy now. You are not obligated to complete the work, but neither are you free to abandon it. Thank you. Let us allow that music to carry us into a time of quiet, of meditation, of prayer, of reflection. And I repeat the words of the reading. Do not be daunted by the enormity of the world's grief. Do justly now. Love mercy now. You are not obligated to complete the work, but neither are you free to abandon it. Love, once again, break our hearts open wide. Some days, the room just won't settle into quiet for whatever reason, it just doesn't. And then some days, we just settle into the quiet, and I think maybe we should just sit together in this stillness for the rest of the hour. Maybe that's what we need most, is to be still together. I know I get restless too after a few minutes, but sometimes the silence in this room really feels like it connects us to something much bigger than this particular moment and breath. And into that silence, we bring our stories, sometimes without words at all, and sometimes with words. Sometimes there is something to tell, some part of it that can be said out loud. And so we make a space for that. If you have a joy or a sorrow or a change unfolding in your life that you would like this community to hear in this moment, come and stand with me up front and tell your piece of the story. And these are haikus because you can't tell all of it, maybe ever. And in this moment, we are hearing life in its most concentrated form. Just the most essential things turning in our hearts. So bring your haiku and come and stand with me and share with this fine congregation.
I'm Dawn Huebner. If I knew we were going for haikus, I would have worked on this in advance. So many of you know that I'm an author and a psychologist, and I had a series of books come out 10 years ago. And I didn't realize at the time when I signed the contract for those books that I was agreeing to not publish anything that could possibly compete with any of the books that I had already published, which meant that my hands were effectively tied in terms of putting out new work in my area of expertise, which is helping anxious children. And it took a 10-year battle with my publisher and a very clever attorney to free myself from that restrictive non-compete clause. And I was really thrilled to release a new book just last week called Outsmarting Worry. And what I was especially happy about was that very quickly the foreign language translators for my other books contacted me, contacted my new publisher about putting this book out in other languages. So I'm really excited that my work is going to be helping not only children here, but around the world, including potentially Iran, where we heard from my psychologist who's interested in doing a translation.
That's wonderful news. Wow. But brief and to the point, crop walk last Sunday, 16 probably plus walkers, beautiful day. We are still counting as far as amounts come in, but the give it away just from the church plate last week was $1,200 plus, and that does not include the online. So we will be posting that. Look at the outreach board as it comes in. I'll make sure that it's up there. But thank you all, and get your shoes ready for next year. Thank you.
I'm Denise, and this is both a joy and a sorrow. 3 weeks from today, Eliza and I will be in China on our trip back. I adopted her when she was 2, and this is the first time we're going back. She's 13 now, and it's amazing, and I'm so lucky and grateful that we are able to go. But it's bringing up all kinds of stuff for her about not ever knowing her birth parents, and every once in a while it just comes out like this, and it just breaks my heart. And I'm so, most of the time I'm so happy and joyful about the fact that I found her, that we found each other, and even more so that we got to take this journey together. But every once in a while, the enormity of what she lost just hits me. So I'm grateful for being a part of this community, to be able to feel that. And I usually keep it to myself because I have to sort of do that, you know, being a parent, be the strong one. So thank you for letting me be in this community and for supporting me, because I definitely feel it. And I'll tell you all about the trip when we come back.
My name is Molly Allen, and I am a parent. And first, I have to acknowledge Denise's difficulty. I feel as though that is a sober thing that I want to honor. I am a parent in another way. I have a new daughter-in-law, and this seems to be an artistic and book publishing comment, because my daughter-in-law is the illustrator of a book published by Candlewick Press. It's for children. The name of the book is Windows, and she is getting amazing acknowledgement for it. I understand that it's a book that has been chosen to be left on the T down in Boston. It illustrates her neighborhood in Somerville, and we were at the book launching party on Friday night.
Okay, I will use the microphone. apparently I have to. So, my name is Bruce Menon, and I have a lot of changes, and an experience to share that was very unexpected for me. I got back about a week and a half ago from Santa Rosa, California, and I went through an experience there. I was visiting friends that I didn't anticipate, and that I don't think anybody ever expects, in terms of the wildfires. And into this circle of people that I know, there was tremendous loss, including loss of life, and this profound sense, and I'm still figuring out all the lessons that I have to learn from this, but the profound sense of how ephemeral things are, how you can lose something that you didn't appreciate. The fire moved so rapidly that there were literally people whose front door was being pounded on by neighbors saying, get out, while the back of their house caught fire. So people had no opportunity to get out, and there are still a number of people missing, and my thoughts go to them. And I wanted to share a story about Quincy, who was this guy that I met out there. And Quincy was this guy who works at Trader Joe's, and he was one of the most optimistic, serene human beings I'd ever met. I mean, you don't think of yourself as going to a shopping center or a store to get connected with somebody who really makes you feel good, but that's who Quincy is. And he lost his house, his mother lost her house, his son lost his house, and the Trader Joe's that he worked at burnt down. And a friend of mine who is close with him told me yesterday that Quincy posted on Facebook a picture of a roll of toilet paper, which was the only thing that he salvaged from his house, a single roll of toilet paper. And I thought about Quincy, and I thought about who he is, and I thought about the human capacity to persevere and to laugh through the tears, which is part of my cultural heritage. And I just, I'm working on all the lessons I need to learn from this, and I do that through writing, so I'm writing a lot and learning, and I just wanted to share that.
Love, once again, break our hearts open wide. For many years now, I have carried Cornel West's words in my mind. Justice is what love looks like in public. And they just, it's a line that just bubbles up in all kinds of moments. And I thought that I would think with you a little bit about what that means and why it's so persistent, at least in my mind. One of the reasons, I think, is that in our culture, we think of love as a personal, private thing that's sort of spontaneously arising and that's mostly sort of family, built around family. That's the sort of narrative that is available in a lot of the public stories about love. And it turns out, of course, that love is much more than that, that it has all kinds of manifestations which we experience constantly, but that sense of moving love from the private and the personal to the public and the societal is a powerful one. It's powerful no matter what, but it's particularly powerful if you are thinking about love as something that is in the protected part of our lives. And also if you think of love as something that sort of happens rather than something that you choose or create. And again, we experience the choosing and creating of love all the time. But I think we live in a culture that tells a story about love that's not that intentional. And so to live in it, to be, I think, a spiritual and religious people, is to remember that love is about creating and choosing and finding that wider circle all the time and telling that story, which isn't the one. If you've been to a romantic comedy recently, that's not the story of love that is being told. And so I think that justice as love in public is an interesting exercise for us to take on all the time. Now, you've heard a little bit about it already this morning. Some of you took part in it yesterday as you walked around town learning the history of our town, learning some of the stories of this place and our people that we mostly don't know. Well, Barbara mostly knew them, but the rest of us don't. We're busy, there's a lot to think about, and they're uncomfortable stories, a lot of them. It's easy to just not. And part of loving our town and loving each other and choosing to create those circles of love means learning those stories that we've relegated to the historical society to just keep for us so that we don't have to think about them. Bring them out and look at them. That is a form of love. And to choose that over and over again is a different way of engaging the world, but it may not feel that sort of warm and fuzzy infusion of Valentine's Day that we associate with the word love. So we get to redefine and reimagine love. Other cultures and languages have more words for love, which is useful. It helps us conceive of these broader ways of thinking about it. One of the other things that happened this week, a little more quietly, that was an action on behalf of love, is that I think there were five of us, six if you count Ronan, who went and testified in front of Governor Sununu this week. He has put out an energy plan and was asking for comments. And our congregation was disproportionately represented at the hearing in Portsmouth. And people showed up and spoke up because they love this earth and they love the way we get to live here together. And that expression of love, of standing up and speaking up, even if you're not sure how it will affect the outcome, is a powerful expression of love. And again, it doesn't necessarily feel like love in the moment. It feels a little uncertain, and it feels a little risky, and it feels a little like you're not sure how anything is going to go. And none of those feelings are usually what we think of as love. But I think that is that love in public, the love standing out where things are more unknown, where we don't know if other people will see the connections, which we know everything is connected. If you were here last week, I'm referring to my new gospel, that everything is connected. And I think that it's true that that's what love is about the fact that we are all connected all the time. And mostly when we're out in public, that's not apparent, and may even be shut down, that connectedness. And so when you put love out in public, it feels extremely risky because you are now inviting people to tell you that the connections are not real and to purposefully disconnect, which is a very hard thing to navigate. And indeed, I think that is how we create justice, is to keep insisting, that we are all connected, that that love is there, and that we just have to find it. One of the other stories that came up this week is a really powerful story, not of our congregation directly, but of navigating that public conversation. You probably heard that Richard Spencer, the white supremacist, spoke in Gainesville, Florida. And you know that there have been some other instances when he spoke and other white supremacists spoke when things went terribly wrong, and in fact, people were killed. So Gainesville was a little on edge. My mentor from when I was a ministerial intern is the interim minister at the Gainesville UU congregation right now. So I was getting constant updates from her about what they were worried about and what they were hoping to have happen and what they were seeing in terms of preparation and how people were trying to set up gatherings in other parts of the city to invite people to have to speak up without direct confrontation so that no one would get hurt. Well, of course, what we saw happen was very direct confrontation and gatherings all over the city and shouting and singing and everything. And fortunately, I don't think anyone was hurt. But here's a little story that you may not have heard in all of this. Right before he started to speak, one of the music professors went up into the Carillon, is that right? Carillon. I've been practicing for 2 days now, and I still have gotten it wrong. Carillon. And played a song on those bells, which are 11 flights up above the campus. And she chose to sing, lift every voice and sing, which is a song that is sometimes referred to as the African American National Anthem. It was written more than a century ago, and it has been used in many contexts to show both the pride and the resilience of African American people. And it's pretty widely known as having that meaning in our culture. So for this music professor to just before Richard Spencer spoke, have that song ringing out over the whole campus is a way to have love in public, is a way to just drop music and connectedness and possibility into the air so that people can hear the world differently and remember that the connections are everywhere all the time. And I love that it was done with music, that you can engage people and engage a whole different story with a hymn tune. That's one of the ways we can find that everything is connected. And so I will invite us at the end of the service to sing that song, so that we can also put that into the air around us, so that we can take in that story and that meaning and that connection. I often don't sing this song because I struggle a little bit with how our congregation, which is predominantly white, predominantly Christian, white Christian, can sing this song that is really, there's a we in the song that is an African American we. And so I wrestle with how we sing it with integrity and presence of mind and not be taking someone else's song. And this week, we absolutely have to sing it because this is one of the ways that we make love public, that we participate in resistance and participate in claiming connections which people are trying to cut and resist. So at the end of the service, I invite you to sing that song. Sing it like you are high up in a bell tower and singing it to go over our whole town, which is trying to find more and more ways to be connected to each other and step boldly into a new world. Each week we take up an offering, and this is one of those practices that's sometimes just about taking care of and loving this community, loving the people who gather here and how we listen to each other and honor each other's stories. And it is always also a collection that makes sure that we are a presence in this town, that there is a song coming out of us that claims something bigger. So the offering is always also an offering to justice in the world, to making our love public. There are candles available up front if you wish to light one for a memory or a hope. The morning offering for all the songs this congregation sings will now be received. I invite you to remain standing and to stand extra tall if you can this morning. And if your knees say sit down and let your spirit stand tall as we sing hymn 149, Lift Every Voice and Sing. I know this congregation pretty well now, and I know that you are a people who are full of love. Take it right out into the streets. Make your love a public thing, and we will make more justice in the world, arm in arm. Please join me in the unison benediction, which is printed in the order of service. Go in peace.
Speak truth. Give thanks each day. Respect the earth and all creatures, for they are alive like you. Care for your body. It is a wondrous gift. Be gentle with yourself.